When I was a little boy, my parents had to spank me for my bad behavior and disobedience. And it only happened a couple times. Lord, forgive me.
Interject Pam.
Interject Pam right there. Exactly. Yeah, so actually it did happen several times, a lot in my childhood. But one of the things that my parents would say as they were making me suffer is they would say this: "This is hurting me a lot more than it's hurting you." And I always wanted to say, I never did, I always wanted to say, "Want to trade places?"
Yeah.
Well, Jesus is going to start telling his disciples about the suffering and pain that he will endure. And although Jesus will be directly receiving the pain, the disciples are going to feel it too. And so today we're in the next verses in Mark. As you know, we're going through the book of Mark. And so now we're to chapter 8, verse 31, where we get this story that Mark tells. "Then Jesus began to tell them that the Son of Man," and we mentioned this phrase last week. This is the phrase Jesus is using to refer to himself now. "Then Jesus began to tell them that the Son of Man must suffer many terrible things and be rejected by the elders, the leading priests, and the teachers of religious law. He would be killed, but 3 days later he would rise from the dead." Well, as he talked about this openly with the disciples, Peter took him aside and began to reprimand him for saying such things. Jesus turned around and looked at his disciples, then reprimanded Peter. "Get away from me, Satan. You are seeing things merely from a human point of view, not from God's." Then, calling the crowd to join his disciples, he said, "Hey, if any of you wants to be my follower, you must give up your own way. Take up your cross and follow me. If you try to hang on to your life, you will lose it. But if you will give up your life for my sake and for the sake of the good news, you will save it. And what do you benefit if you gain the whole world but lose your own soul? Is anything worth more than your soul? If anyone is ashamed of me and my message in these adulterous and sinful days, the Son of Man will be ashamed of that person when he returns in the glory of his Father with his holy angels." Well, if you remember, even just from last week, Jesus had asked his disciples, "Who do you say I am?" And it was Peter, the spokesman of the group, it seems like, the most vocal one. Last week, and just in the verses prior, he said, "You are the Messiah." When Jesus spoke of the suffering, though, and the death of the Messiah, his disciples could hardly believe what they were hearing. You see, all their lives, they had connected that the Messiah would be this power figure who would save God's people from their oppressors. You see, the Messiah was the Israelites' Batman. The Messiah was going to be their knight in shining armor. The Messiah was going to be the one who would come and say to the Roman government, "Go ahead, make my day." The idea of this suffering Messiah just didn't make any sense. Well, did you notice how Jesus became rather abrupt, though, with Peter when Peter tried to talk some sense into him? Although it was Peter's voice that was audible, Jesus recognized it was the voice of the tempter. It was the voice of Satan. Jesus didn't want to suffer and die. He knew that he had the strength and power from God to avoid death. He could call down an army of angels to destroy Israel's enemies once for all. And in the concerned words of his friend Peter, Jesus recognized the temptation of the devil. The devil was tempting him to fall down and worship him. to take the road of least resistance rather than the way of the Father. It's interesting how the devil tries to persuade us, isn't it? And sometimes it's through the words of a well-meaning friend or family member. Sometimes there's an opportunity for Christian service that comes our way, or an opportunity to stand up for justice that comes our way. And in our hearts, we're completely convinced, absolutely convinced, this is from God. We know that He's calling us to obey His will. We know that it will cost us a lot in terms of losing something. However, we are at peace with our decision, knowing that it's God's will. But as we share our decision sometimes with family and friends, they raise one red flag after another. And maybe that's happened to you. You see, the devil is clever. With our knowledge, he uses the people who are closest to us. Actually, without our knowledge, he uses people closest to us to break our spirits and obedience to God. And Peter was that friend who just a little while earlier, remember when Jesus asked the disciples, "Who do you say I am?" And again, Peter was the one that raised his voice and said, "You're the Messiah. You're the Christ. You're the Son of the living God." Peter's good intentions and his dedication to his master, though, kept him from seeing God's divine plan of salvation for all of mankind. Jesus saw through those well-meaning words of the disciple. He caught the devil in his act, and he called him on the carpet. Jesus, you see, was fully focused on God's agenda, not his own. Jesus was focused on God's agenda, not his own. Then Jesus spoke of the seriousness of concentrating on God's agenda. In verse 34 is where he says, "If any of you wants to be my follower, you must give up your own way." That is not the American way, is it? But that's the Jesus way. That's the Bible way. That's God's way. "If any of you wants to be my follower, you must give up your own way, take up your cross, and then follow me." We're almost startled by the brutal honesty with which Jesus confronts his would-be followers. You see, the folks that were around that Jesus said to the crowd, "Come on in here and let me tell you some more about following me." They were around Jesus, but I'm not sure how many were followers, really, followers yet. They were around Jesus because, hey, what if I get a cold? This guy can make me well. What if I fall down and break a bone? This guy could heal. What if I'm hungry and there's no food around? I hear he prepares a nice fish sandwich. Maybe that's why they were around. But Jesus is letting them know what it's like to be a follower. In our clean and neat westernized Christian culture, it almost sounds like an oxymoron. Someone certainly switched the price tags. You see, at every turn of our culture, it screams, "You must be yourself. Be numero uno. Bump off as many as you can on your way up the success ladder." But Jesus says, "If anyone wants to come after me, he must deny himself." So instead, we must let Christ shine through us. The Apostle Paul said it this way, "It is no longer I that live, but Christ lives in me." And self-denial doesn't mean to have a poor self-image, like poor me, I'm a nobody. Rather, self-denial in the Christian sense implies knowing exactly who we are in relationship to God. Exactly who we are in relationship to God. He's the King of the universe. We are His servants. We are His princes. We are His children. We are His children. We have everything to gain by denying Him ourselves. Let me say that again. We have everything to gain by denying ourselves. And boy, you won't find that in the TV commercials, will you? But Christ's challenge goes on. He says that we must take up his cross. And in Jesus' day, to carry a cross was more than just a personal hardship. It wasn't just something that, oh, this is heavy on my shoulder. Oh, this has got splinters. I think something is digging into my skin. In Jesus' day, the cross was the method of execution for criminals. Christ is in fact saying to the crowd, Christ is in fact saying to us today, his followers must be willing to suffer as criminals for his name's sake. His followers must be willing to suffer as criminals for his name's sake. Now, you think I ought to maybe write that on some poster board and use that as motivation to get people to come next Sunday? It's not going to draw a lot of people in, but you have been drawn in by this very thing, have you not? And many of you, as I have come to know you, you've been denying yourself for years, for decades. You've been taking up your cross for a long time. So you know what this is like. But we also know that there's a lot of folks who aren't doing this. And there are some churches and there are some pastors that won't cover this verse. And they'll say everything is just peaches and cream if you follow Jesus. But Jesus didn't say that. So we have to preach the whole truth, don't we? That's why we go through every verse when we cover a book. Well, in our day and age, it seems like people say, work as hard as you can, get as much as you can in your early years so that you can kick up your legs and relax in your retirement years. Jesus promises no instant gratification, but rather hardship. He gives us no hope of winning a popularity contest either. In Christ's service, there's no room for playing king of the castle. Why? We may ask, why? Why does Jesus make things so hard and complicated for us? And we find the answer in verse 36, starting there. And what do you benefit if you gain the whole world, and that's what our world is trying to do, gain everything they can. What do you benefit if you gain the whole world but lose your own soul? Is anything worth more than your soul? That's the question Jesus is asking. Is anything worth more than your soul? I'm seeing head shake no. Hopefully people will realize that's the greatest gain, is to save our soul. But many are not there yet. You know, we're often tempted to fall down. I say tempted to fall down and worship the deceiver for a little bit of instant gratification. And sometimes we might be tempted to sacrifice our honor for personal gain or profit. We may put a higher value on material things than on spiritual growth and integrity. I've been there. Or we may be tempted to sacrifice our moral principles in exchange for popularity. And the kids aren't here right now, but boy, this is where I'd really like to share with them. We have one young person here. It's so easy when you're in school, grade school, middle school, high school, college, to want to do whatever you can just to be in the popular crowd, just to be liked by the popular kids. And there's times we can be tempted to lose our moral principles in exchange for that popularity. We can save ourselves a lot of trouble, even as adults, if we'll just agree with everyone on controversial issues. But let's keep in mind that the question we must all face one day is not what are the people going to think of me, but what does God think of me? It's not the verdict of public opinion, but the verdict of God that will determine our final destiny. I've referred to this different times in some of my past messages that ever since I found out that we had a granddaughter coming, and we just have one grandchild. We have one child, one daughter-in-law, one grandchild. It's a pretty small family. But when I found out that our grandchild was coming, I thought, I want to start a book about her life from my perspective. And so I started writing even during the pregnancy, and I kind of made that the introduction of the book. And then every year of her life is a chapter. And what I will do is I'll write down the funny things she says or does, or some really serious things, or I want to share my faith with her all along in a way that as she reads it when she gets older, she'll understand things better. Occasionally, it's the book is mainly made up of the things I have observed or heard, things we've experienced together. But occasionally, there's things that our son or daughter-in-law will hear her say or watch her do, and they'll share it with me. And that's what I want to share this today. It's just a real quick thing that text from our son Ross, because this has to do with this whole idea of trying to be in the popular group. Ross texts this: there's been some concerning behavior from a group of kids. Some Vivi, that's her granddaughter, some Vivi is or was friends with. This behavior's been going on for a while, but we all just learned about it. All the parents just learned about it. She was not participating in the concerning behavior. And so we told her how proud we were that she separated herself from that. And then he says this: Vivi said that she would never do anything that wasn't right in her eyes, the eyes of her parents, or the eyes of God. I wish I was thinking halfway like that when I was 11 years old. And you know, whether we're 5 or 11 or 17 or 50 or 65, we're all tempted sometimes to sacrifice eternity for the moment. And there are so many things in life that offer pleasure and success instantly, but that will ruin our eternity. The real test in life is to seek the things that are from God. Our greatest mission in life is to have God's things in mind, to check ourselves against the life of the suffering Christ, and measure our lives according to his will. You see, Jesus, he spells out the price that we have to pay if we want to be his disciples. Jesus came not to offer us an easy life, but to teach us the way to God. And in doing so, he never expects anything from his followers, you and me, that he isn't willing to do himself. You see, he denied himself and followed God's will. He took up the cross literally and was crucified as a criminal. Therefore, if we choose to follow Jesus in our lives, we must ever deny ourselves and ask him to rule our every thought and action. God gave us life in Jesus Christ that we may offer this life up to him as a living sacrifice. And we all know the problem sometimes of a living sacrifice: it can crawl off the altar. God gave us life to spend and not to keep for ourselves. If we live carefully, always thinking first of our own profit, ease, comfort, and security, if our sole aim is to make life as long and trouble-free as possible, if we make no effort except for ourselves, we will lose our life. But if we spend our life for others, if we disregard our health, our wealth, our time, our comfort, in an honest desire to spend our life for God and neighbor, then we are making a mark for eternity. There is nothing less than our very soul at stake here. And what's a soul worth? If you guys want to go ahead and we'll get to our closing song, I just two final thoughts. Maybe you have already decided to be Christ's disciple, but have lost some of the vigor that moved you in the beginning. So this is a good time to bring your life back in order with God and ask Him to renew your life for Him. Or maybe there's someone that you know that's at a point in their life that for the first time God is asking them to consider the cost. Jesus is asking them to consider the cost to follow Him. And in this case, may God give that person the strength and conviction to give their entire life to Him. You're never too young to follow Christ, and you're never too old. What is our closing hymn?
We're going to be at the chorus book, number 171, Into My Heart.
Into My Heart. Okay, chorus books.
Number 171.
171.